Good morning. You are listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind Radio. The Lowell Association for the Blind Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network, your main source of the accessible community news and information. We're located in Lowell, Massachusetts. We read local news, editorials, feature stories, and more. The Lowell Association for the Blind Radio is brought to you by volunteers and staff of the Lowell Association for the Blind. This morning, Dottie and I will be reading to you from Reader's Digest and the Sentinel Enterprise. And we would like to thank the Nancy L. and Richard K. Donahue Charitable Foundation for their support. All right, Dottie.
Okay, this first article I'm going to read comes from the Reader's Digest, and it's called Drawn to Help. The Palisades Fire in Los Angeles burned Charlotte Tragos' home to the ground. The height chart from when she was a child was marked on the kitchen wall. Family heirlooms filled the cupboards. Her parents' wedding video from the 1990s was stashed away in the basement. All of it gone. It was pretty special and unique house, says Tragos, who fled with her parents, her younger sister, and their three dogs when the fire broke out on January 7th, 2025. All the teenager took with her was her high school diploma, her dog's ashes, and a pair of sneakers. The streets were packed with people running, driving on the wrong side of the road, she says, adding that everyone knew they were running for their lives. A few days after the fire started, a friend shared a video with her of a Los Angeles artist offering to create, for free, watercolor paintings of people's homes before they were scorched. Tragos reached out to the artist, Jordan Heber, asking if she could do Tragos' childhood home. I wanted to do it as a surprise to my parents, who are inundated with so much right now, she says. Tragos sent a photo to Heber, who completed a painting of Tragos' home in just 3 days. Our homes are so much more than these physical standing things that we keep our belongings in, says Heber, who lives in Santa Monica. It's an incredible honor to create these lasting tributes to the places that held so much life and memory. Tragos said she will forever be grateful to Heber. It means the world, she says. We're in a position where we have nothing and anything like that, especially pieces that commemorate what the house meant to us. It is really uplifting. Heber works as a brand strategist and does commissioned paintings, primarily of people's homes, on the side. She typically charges between $350 and $400 per painting. I moved around a lot when I was younger, and so the meaning of home is significant to me, Heber said, noting that she has the word home tattooed on her forearm. After the wildfire started, Heber thought about ways she could contribute. A friend sent her an Instagram post by another local artist offering to draw people's homes at no charge, and Heber was inspired. This will be my way to help people, said Heber. Shortly after she posted her offer on social media, requests started coming in. Heber has created more than 25 paintings, including one for Jeremy Weinberg, whose home in Pacific Palisades was destroyed. It was a place you never wanted to leave, says Weinberg, adding that the house had been in his family for nearly 30 years. At the time of the fire, Weinberg was home with his partner Xander Jimenez and their two dogs, Winnie and James. Weinberg was able to grab his jewelry box and iPad before they had to flee. He left the rest of his belongings behind. It's not just stuff. It was everything that represents me. And I just feel so lost right now, says Weinberg, who went to stay at his father's home 130 miles away. Jimenez came across Hebert's painting, offered on Instagram, and eagerly sent her a message. We told her our story, and she so kindly and lovingly made such a beautiful memory that looks exactly as it was a photograph, says Weinberg. We're going to frame it and put it in our new home eventually. Heber is glad people find her paintings meaningful and said, hopefully it inspires others to use their talents to help people. And isn't that a nice thing for her to do, to offer to paint these houses at no charge?
Oh, that's really great. Now we have from Fitchburg, the power of literacy. Local nonprofit provides confidential English language tutoring. And Literacy Volunteers of the Montechusett area is seeking people who are willing to help area residents with English language tutoring. The city-based nonprofit organization was founded in 1973 and is affiliated with Literacy Volunteers of Massachusetts. The upcoming volunteer information sessions for those who want to be literacy volunteers are being held at Fitchburg City Hall on Wednesday, January 7th, that's tomorrow, from 1 to 2:30 p.m., and Thursday, January 8th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Okay, and also at the Leominster Public Library on Tuesday, January 13th, from 1 to 2:30 p.m., and two Zoom sessions, January 8th and 13th. New volunteers complete an application, receive an 18-hour comprehensive tutor training program, which is made possible with a grant from the Community Foundation of North Central Massachusetts. Tutor for 2 hours a week and receive ongoing development opportunities as well as access to free materials and courses. Those interested can email lvmonta.org info or info@lvmonta.org or fill out an online form by visiting Docs Google Doc Form. There's a long, I think probably the best thing, if I can find you a phone number, is to call them. We are always looking for volunteers, community partners, and supporters who believe in the power of literacy, said Literacy Volunteers of the Montechusett Area Executive Director Zwaniki Vizza of the Rewarding Experience. Even a few hours a week can make a lasting difference in someone's life. And I think instead of worrying about all those .coms, just call the Leominster Public Library or the Fitchburg City Hall, and they will direct you. You're talking about Literacy Volunteers of Massachusetts. No teaching experience is required, just a commitment to learning and supporting adult learners, Vissa said. And they provide support resources and workshops for the volunteers throughout the year. The Lunenburg resident first got involved with the nonprofit 4 years ago after visiting the organization's table at the annual Apple Blossom Festival at Sholin Farms in Leominster, a faithful encounter that led her to where she is today. I stopped at their table to ask for information because I was interested in becoming a volunteer tutor, Vizza disclosed. During our conversation, I learned that the organization was also searching for a new executive director. At the same time, I was looking for a new professional opportunity. What began as an interest in volunteering turned into a perfect match, and I ultimately stepped into the role of executive director rather than becoming a tutor. There are currently approximately 40 active literacy volunteers who serve adults in the Montechusett region, including communities such as Ashburnham, Ashby, Devons, Fitchburg, Gardner, Lancaster, Leominster, Shirley, Townsend, Westminster, and more. Our adult students come from many different cultural backgrounds and countries, including the U.S., and speak a wide variety of native languages, Vizza said. Our students are native English speakers that need to improve their reading and writing skills, or native English speakers that need to improve their English skills. Services they offer include free, confidential adult basic literacy tutoring, or ESOL, English for speakers of other languages, tutoring, conversation circles, citizenship preparation classes, and short-term English courses and workshops. Most tutoring is one-to-one, allowing instruction to be tailored to each learner's goals, Visa said. Literacy is about dignity, opportunity, and inclusion. Our volunteers are deeply committed to supporting neighbors who want to improve their skills and contribute fully to their communities. This work strengthens not only individuals, but families and the community as a whole. As a North Central Mass resident for several years, Vissa said she appreciates the feeling of community she herself has felt and experienced. It has truly become home for me and my family, and I value the strong sense of connection and care people show for one another here, she said. Literacy Volunteers of the Montechuset Area, a nonprofit organization based in Fitchburg, is seeking volunteers to help provide confidential English language tutoring for residents in the region. When asked what the biggest benefits are for the literacy program participants, Visser noted, improve literacy and our English skills, which in turn help students gain confidence, independence, and opportunity. Our students use these skills to communicate with teachers and doctors, support their children's education, advance in their jobs, prepare for citizenship, and feel more connected to their community. Visa reported that while ICE activity in the region has certainly made some of their tutors and students uncomfortable and caused some to shy away from fully participating in the program, she wants people to know that our services are confidential, welcoming, and focused solely on education. Creating a safe and respectful learning environment is a top priority for us, especially during uncertain times, she emphasized. She said it's important to her and the literacy volunteers to provide these valuable services to their fellow community members, and then she enjoys being part of the process. I love seeing the relationships that form between tutors and students and witnessing the small but powerful moments of progress. Reading a first book, holding a conversation, no longer needing a translator, passing a citizenship interview, Visa said. It's incredibly rewarding to be part of an organization that changes lives through human connection and learning. And this information, here's a good phone number, 978-343-8184. And that is Literacy Volunteers of Montechuset Area. Now, all the areas around here, I'm sure, have literacy volunteers. I know the greater Lowell does, so they have it. Okay, so this is a really wonderful opportunity.
Yes, it is. Here's some funny little stories. When the box came from her, sister arrived, my friend Diane excitedly ripped it open. Inside, she found a colorful hat that was soft and fuzzy. She loved it and quickly tried it on, but it didn't fit. She turned it around and then tried it at a different angle. No matter how she wore it, it didn't look right. So she called her sister Jane. I got the hat that you sent me, Diane said, but it doesn't fit. A hat? Said Jane, guffawing. I sent you a toilet seat cover. I'm always inspired when people turn 100 and they're still so vigorous. While walking through our retirement community, I came upon a recent centenarian who looked so full of life that I had to stop and ask, how do you do it? You just put one foot in front of the other, she said, smiling. And then she added, of course, you first have to wake up. And when writing anything, okay, and the next, these are three little ones about children. My five-year-old granddaughter politely asked her mother if she had to eat her roll at dinner. No, said her mother. If you don't want to eat your roll, you don't have to. With that, my granddaughter removed the middle of the roll, shoved her green beans inside, and threw the roll away. I asked my son, Teddy, five, if he knew what the phrase too little, too late meant. He said, it's when you have short legs and can't run so fast, so you end up late getting to places. And the last one here, the first time that my young grandson accompanied me to Hobby Lobby store, he looked around in utter amazement. I could see his mind working. What is this place? Then it dawned on him. This, he shouted, is a Home Depot for nanas.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
And now we're going to talk about food. Back on the menu. Harbor shellfish, harvest safe to eat. For the first time in 100 years, commercial and recreational shellfishes will be allowed to direct harvest shellfish in Boston Harbor, according to the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries. Thanks largely to multi-billion dollar cleanup of Boston Harbor, water quality has improved enough to reclassify certain areas of the harbor to conditionally approved, allowing shellfish for direct human consumption, said Wayne Castingway, the Gloucester Regional Shellfish Supervisor. These areas include some of the most productive shellfish habitats in the Bay State, in parts of Winthrop, Hingham, and Hull. Not only will this be a tremendous boon to residents of the three towns, but also to other Massachusetts residents interested in recreational shellfishing, Castingway added. Some of these areas have been harvested over the years on a limited basis, but the soft shell clams had to be sent to the Division of Marine Fisheries Shellfish Depuration Plant in Newburyport, where the clams were purified before they could go to the market. While the depuration process makes shellfish safe to eat, it's expensive, labor-intensive, and is limited to a few specially trained and certified commercial harvesters. As such, most residents of the Commonwealth could not benefit from this fishery, the Gloucester Regional Shellfish Supervisor said. Reclassification in Boston Harbor will eliminate the need for this highly regulated and controlled process and allow this bountiful public resource to benefit the general public. In 1925, a national typhoid epidemic caused by the consumption of contaminated oysters led to the closure of almost all of Boston Harbor to shellfishing. While the state has ruled that large areas of the outer harbor are clean enough to be reclassified for direct harvest, the actual timing of the reopening requires more collaboration with the local cities and towns. As a home rule state, Massachusetts cedes management of shellfishing in clean waters to the local cities and towns. Because Winthrop, Hingham, and Hull have no history of managing shellfishing, they need to take some other steps before they can allow shellfishing. First, a local management plan must be developed to specify how the fishery will be managed sustainably. Second, they need to establish enforceable rules and regulations as well as a local permitting system. Third, a local shellfish constable must be hired and trained to oversee all the aspects of the fishery. Also, the areas will be subject to closures following rainfall, sewage spills, and other unforeseen events that can negatively affect water quality. As a result, the towns will need to develop a conditional area management plan with the state. To help the towns develop the new procedures, DMF Shellfish Program staff have already met with officials from Winthrop, Hingham, and Hull These areas are expected to begin opening for shellfish harvesting this year. And that's very exciting because then we will be having available to us at good cost more shellfish. Right, Dorothy? I know you probably love clams, so here we go.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
And if you've ever wondered about the continent of Antarctica, here are some interesting facts. The North Pole gets all the attention this time of year. But what about the South Pole? The southernmost spot on Earth and Antarctica, the continent it sits on, are surreal. At the South Pole, the sun rises just once a year and doesn't set until 6 months later. The landscape, snow and ice as far as the eye can see, and that ice extends down more than a mile. In some places, it's almost 3 miles thick. Can you imagine ice that thick? Few have set foot in Antarctica. Its only inhabitants, between 1,000 and 5,000 people, depending on the season, live at one of the 70 permanent research stations on the continent. Their food has to be flown or shipped in, since it can't be grown in the ground. Between the scientists and their support staff, roughly 3,000 Americans are stationed in Antarctica annually. To minimize their environmental impact, most of the garbage they generate gets shipped back to the United States. All countries conducting research in Antarctica have promised to adhere to the Antarctic Treaty, which designates the continent as a place to be used only for peaceful and scientific purposes. The flags of all 12 original signers of the 1959 treaty from Argentina, Australia, Belgium, Chile, France, Japan, New Zealand, Norway, South Africa, the UK, and the United States, and the USSR are flown around the South Pole. The first person to reach the South Pole was Roald Amundsen of Norway. He and his team arrived on December 14, 1911. Just weeks later, Englishman Robert F. Scott and his party found that the tent that Amundsen's team left behind, which told the Brits that they had been beaten to it. Both explorers are immortalized at the South Pole with a plaque and the name of the U.S.-run Amundsen Scott South Pole Station. People at that station celebrate Christmas with an annual race around the world. It's just for fun, and some participants tack lid on skis, sleds, or motorized vehicles. The course, while only 2 miles long, crosses every line of longitude since they all meet at the poles. It's very cold in Antarctica, around minus 22 degrees Fahrenheit this time of year, and that's summer in the southern hemisphere. In the winter, temps can drop to minus 112 degrees, and the coldest temperature ever recorded there was a minus 128.6 degrees. The closer to the coast, the warmer it gets. It can even climb to a balmy 50 degrees, which will feel like a heat wave for us come Friday.
Wow.
No polar bears live in Antarctica. No dogs either, even though sled dogs played a huge role in helping Amundsen reach the South Pole. Dogs have been banned since 1994 because of concerns about their impact on native species. For one thing, dogs like to go after birds, and Antarctica is home to an estimated 20 million penguins. While it contains 90% of Earth's ice and 70% of Earth's fresh water, Antarctica counts as a desert because it gets so little snowfall, less than 2 inches per year. That makes Antarctica the driest continent. It's also the windiest. The highest wind speed recorded there, 199 miles per hour. A small wind farm on one of Antarctica's islands generates enough energy to replace more than 100,000 gallons of diesel fuel. Antarctica is roughly the size of the U.S. and Mexico put together. But as anyone who has put an ice tray in the freezer knows, ice takes up more space than water. In winter, the sea ice in Antarctica can cover up to 7 million square miles. But by the end of summer, it can shrink to less than 700,000 square miles. As the sea ice melts, it gets pulled into a current that runs around the continent. This current has a flow more than 100 times greater than all the rivers on Earth combined. Among the most unusual geological feature in Antarctica is a crimson waterfall, aptly named Blood Falls. The water, which cascades over the edge of the Taylor Glacier, is so rich in iron that it immediately oxidizes or rusts when it comes into contact with the air, turning bright red and leaving a steady streak in the ice as if it had a gushing wound. Yet another reddish feature is the lake of lava at Mount Erebus, one of the two active volcanoes in Antarctica. With at least 100 inactive ones, the continent has the highest concentration of volcanoes on Earth. The molten magma in Erebus's lake, lava lake, continuously churns, remaining red hot despite the continent's low temperatures. Scientists aren't the only ones working in Antarctica. The main U.S. outpost, McMurdo Station, employs more than 1,000 people during the summer season, among them cooks, janitors, medics, mechanics, and more. In some ways, working in Antarctica is not unlike camp or college. Staff sleep in dorms, eat in dining halls, and partake in extracurriculars such as bands, book clubs, movie nights, arts and crafts, and yoga classes. To experience Antarctica as a tourist, you could take a scenic flight over it. Several cruise lines also make the trek. Despite hefty prices, Viking Cruises and Antarctica tours start at $13,000. The bottom of the world is becoming a popular destination. During the 2023 to 2024 season, more than 100,000 people visited Antarctica. Overseeing them, the International Association of Antarctic Tour Operators, their strict travel guidelines ensure the continent's protection of one of the most preserved regions on the planet. So if you're looking for a place to go, there's Antarctica.
There is. I mean, it's not on my bucket because I think I'd be afraid about being the weather.
Right.
Now, this is interesting and sad. Leaders of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private agency that has steered federal funding to PBS, NPR, and hundreds of public television and radio stations across the country, voted Monday to dissolve the organization, which was created in 1967. And the picture in the newspaper shows the entrance to the Arizona PBS offices in the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication in Phoenix. Now, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting has been winding down since Congress acted last summer to defund its operation at the encouragement of President Donald Trump. Its board of directors chose Monday to shut a CPB completely instead of keeping it in existence as a shell. CPB's final act would be to protect the integrity of the public media system and the democratic values by dissolving rather than allowing the organization to remain defunded and vulnerable to additional attacks, said Patricia Harrison, the organization's president and CEO. Many Republicans have long accused public broadcasting, and particularly its news program, of being biased towards liberals, but it wasn't until the second Trump administration, with full GOP control of Congress, that those criticisms were turned into action. Ruby Calvert, head of CPB's board of directors, said the federal defunding of public media has been devastating. Even at this moment, I am convinced that public media will survive and that a new Congress will address public media's role in our country because it is critical to our children's education, our history, culture, and democracy to do so, Calvert said. CPB said it was financially supporting the American Archive of Public Broadcasting in its effort to preserve historic content and is working with the University of Maryland to maintain its records. Now, it says everything factual, so it's not twisting the history of what we know or what we have seen. And wonderful, wonderful children's programs. Yeah. You know, it's really good.
Not just children's programs, no. But we love All Creatures Great and Small.
Oh, we do too.
Call the Midwife.
Doc
and Martin.
The science programs.
Oh,
the science programs are unbelievable.
Yeah.
And the news is brought to you from locations.
Yes.
And it's, you know, and it's also, we don't have commercials because it's funded by people's donations and a little bit from the federal government. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really a sad day, and it's maintaining its integrity. So this is why it's doing that.
Yeah.
Now we have something here that's positive from Gardner. Mount Wachusett Community College held the pinning ceremony for the class of 2025 practical nursing graduates in December. President James Van Hoeven welcomed the students. You have worked incredibly hard to be here this afternoon to celebrate with your classmates, families, friends, and faculty. It has been a difficult program, and you have overcome obstacles and challenges, and yet you persevered and persisted, and here you are today, Van Hoeven said. You will stand here as a testament to determination, resilience, and the power of dreams realized, says Kimberly Shea, DNPRN, Dean of Nursing and Health Services. Over the past 10 months, you have embarked on a journey that was anything but easy. You balanced demanding coursework, clinical rotations, and countless sleepless nights. You've shared wonderful and challenging times together. Today, you are not just graduates. You are leaders in compassionate care and the newest ambassadors in nursing profession. Joining Dean Shea were nursing faculty members Colleen Thaxton, MSN-RN, Emily Turner, MSN-RN, and Albert Rowland, MSN-RN. Now, MSWCC's Practical Nursing Certificate Program prepares students to sit for the National Council Licensure Examination, Practical Nursing, to earn their license to practice as an LPN. Credits earned in the Practical Nursing Program can be applied to the Associate Degree in Nursing. And this is wonderful that Massachusetts Community College offers this program because many more people are able to take advantage of it that can't afford to go to other places because of time and financial difficulty. And that class has quite a few gentlemen in it, which is nice because we need male nurses too.
Oh, we certainly do.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Okay, and did you ever wonder about recalls? How to find out and what to do if a food or product you bought is deemed unsafe? At the end of 2024, Walmart shoppers in 20 states learned that the bagged market-side broccoli florets at their local stores were being recalled. A month later, the FDA reclassified the recall as Class 1, the highest danger level, meaning the product could cause serious health issues or even death. The problem was potential contamination with Listeria, a bacteria that can cause several severe food poisoning. There were no reported illnesses or deaths when the recall was announced, and no more of the product was being sold since it's illegal for retailers to sell recalled products. But health experts worried that some people might still have some of the broccoli in their refrigerator or freezer. Social media lit up. One woman reported that she had to go to the emergency room for severe dehydration caused by food poisoning after eating the broccoli. I had no idea about the recall until it was too late, she posted. I am so sick. Thank God my kids did not eat it. Stories like this are terrifying, of course. No one wants to think that they have food at home that might make them sick or products that could be dangerous. But while recalls might be scary, they're actually quite common. There were about 300 food recalls in 2024 and more than 3,200 product recalls, including medications, personal care products, furniture, toys, baby supplies, and cars. In the first half of 2025 alone, we have seen recalls of products as diverse as peanut butter crackers, chocolate, cough syrup, pet food, canned tuna, baby teething sticks, eye drops, waffles, the list goes on and on. But remember that recalls are an important way government and consumer agencies monitor safety and try to prevent illness by an injury by removing risky products from the market. While the biggest recalls, like the 20-state Walmart broccoli example, make local and national news, not all do. So how do you know when something you use or eat might pose a risk? Recalls, government posts links about products in every category. Other agencies share recall information too. And our sister site, thehealthy.com, aims to keep you up to date. Here are key things to know about different types of recalls. About food, who's in charge? The Food and Drug Administration regulates about 3/4 of the U.S. food supply. Everything except most meat and poultry and certain fish and egg products, which are regulated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. What happens? The two main reasons for food recalls are labeling errors and potential contamination. Labeling errors usually have to do with ingredients that might cause a serious allergic reaction, such as eggs, peanuts, or shellfish, but aren't listed on the package. Other recalls are because of possible contamination with bacteria, viruses, or parasites that can cause food poisoning or other illness. Some recalls happen when there's reason to suspect that foreign objects like glass, metal shards, plastic pieces, or rodent droppings may be present. Some foods are more apt to be recalled than others. The Consumer Reports website, consumerreports.org, has a list of the most commonly recalled foods. These include onions, flour, poultry, ground beef, cheeses, and deli meats, leafy greens like bagged salads, and pre-cut fruits like peaches, papayas, and melons. Most major retail and grocery chains publish recalls on their websites, and they also post notices in stores. Some, such as Walmart, Costco, Trader Joe's, and Kroger, lets you subscribe to email lists of recalls. Once recalled, foods are immediately removed from store shelves, but the email notices inform people who have previously purchased the items. Where to get info? Links to recalls from the FDA and USDA are available at foodsafety.gov. How about medical, personal care, and pet products? Who's in charge? The FDA is also in charge of recalls involving cosmetics, pet foods, medications for people and pets, vaccines, and medical devices. what happens. For most recalls, consumers are urged to stop eating that food or using that product immediately. Medication is an exception, says Chris Snyder, a registered pharmacist with the Cleveland Clinic. It may be more harmful to stop taking the medication, continue taking the medication as prescribed, and contact your doctor or pharmacist as soon as possible. Where to get the information? FDA.gov has a recalls, market withdrawals, and safety alerts page with recalls of drugs, medical devices, cosmetics, tobacco products, and more, in addition to food. What about clothing, toys, and furniture? Who's in charge? The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission enforces the safety standards of products such as clothing, furniture, toys, and recreational equipment. What happens? The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission ensures that children's clothing doesn't violate flammability standards, toys don't present choking hazards, and furniture isn't in danger of toppling over. Where to get the info? The CPSC.gov has a recalls and product safety warnings page that provides updates in these categories. Also, one of the best ways to keep up with the products recalls is to make sure you fill out the registration card that comes with many new purchases. Once registered, you'll be notified if there's a recall. Some websites, including Amazon, automatically pass along recall information to buyers. Amazon also has a recalls and product safety alerts page. Vehicles. Who's in charge? Automobiles and related parts are regulated by the Department of Transportation, of which the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is a sub-agency. What happens? You've probably heard of the Takata airbag recall, which affected 67 million vehicles from 19 automakers. The airbags were installed in cars that were mostly manufactured between 2002 and 2015, and the danger was that some of the airbags exploded when they deployed, injuring or even killing drivers and passengers. The agency called it largest and most complex safety recall in U.S. history. At least 36 deaths were caused by the defective airbags, and the recall caused the Takata company to go bankrupt, and the saga still isn't over. In April 2024, the agency reported that while nearly 90% of the airbags were repaired or replaced after the recall, there were still millions on the road. Thankfully, most recalls involving automobiles aren't this dire. But with so many different working parts in every vehicle, it's no wonder that recalls are fairly frequent. Because new car purchases are registered, owners are notified and given instructions of how to get repairs and parts replacements, usually at no cost. In July, for example, Ford recalled more than 850,000 vehicles in the United States because of a potential fuel pump failure that could cause cars to stall. Where to get info? If you bought a used vehicle, you can use the agency's website search tool, nhtsa.gov/recalls, and enter your car's vehicle identification number or VIN, the 17-character code usually found on the dashboard or the driver's side door jamb, to find out if there's been a recall on that model. And the last one on here, what to do if a product you use has been recalled. Most importantly, don't ignore the recall. In almost all cases, again, medication is an exception, You should stop using or eating that product immediately. While getting rid of something you eat or use might be inconvenient or even expensive, it's better than risking illness or injury. Next, if there are instructions from the manufacturer on the notice you received in the mail or the post you found online, follow them. This might involve returning the product for repair, replacement, or refund. Finally, if you learn you have consumed a recalled food, pay attention to any symptoms you or anyone else who ate that food might be experiencing. Contact your health care provider if anyone has diarrhea, vomiting, fever, muscle aches, or confusion.
So there's some
ideas on recalls.
You really had a long list there, Dottie. So I'm thinking I have to call you up if I have a question. Now, this is from London. Auschwitz survivor Eva Schlotz, the stepsister of teenage diarist Anne Frank, and a tireless educator about the horrors of the Holocaust, has died. She was 96. The Anne Frank Trust, UK, of which Schloss was honorary president, said she died Saturday in London, where she lived. Britain's King Charles III said he was privileged and proud to have known Schloss, who co-founded the charitable trust to help young people challenge prejudice. The horrors that she endured as a young woman are impossible to comprehend, and yet she devoted the rest of her life to overcoming hatred and prejudice, promoting kindness, courage, understanding, and resilience through her tireless work for the Anne Frank Trust UK and for Holocaust education across the world, the King said. Born Eva Geringer in Vienna in 1929, Schloss fled with her family to Amsterdam after Nazi Germany annexed Austria. She became friends with another Jewish girl of the same age, Anne Frank, whose diary would become one of the most famous chronicles of the Holocaust. Like the Franks, Eva's family spent 2 years in hiding to avoid capture after the Nazis occupied the Netherlands. They were eventually betrayed, arrested, and sent to the Auschwitz death camp. Schloss and her mother, Fritzi, survived until a camp was liberated by the Soviet troops in 1945. Her father, Eric, and brother, Heinz, died in Auschwitz. After the war, Eva moved to Britain, married German-Jewish refugee Zvi Schloss, and settled in London. In 1953, her mother married Frank's father, Otto, the only member of his immediate family to survive. Anne Frank died of typhus in the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp at the age of 15, months before the end of the war. Schloss did not speak publicly about her experience for decades, later saying that wartime trauma has made her withdrawn and unable to connect with others. I was silent for years, first because I wasn't allowed to speak, and then I repressed it. I was angry with the world, she told the Associated Press in 2004. But after she addressed the opening of an Anne Frank exhibition in London in 1986, Schloss made it her mission to educate younger generations about the Nazi genocide. Over the following decade, she spoke in schools and prisons, at international conferences, and told her story in books, including Eva's Story, a survivor's tale by the stepsister of Anne Frank. She kept campaigning into her 90s. In 2019, she traveled to Newport Beach, California, to meet teenagers who were photographed making Nazi salutes at a high school party. The following year, she was part of a campaign urging Facebook to remove Holocaust-denying material from the social networking site. We must never forget the terrible consequences of treating people as other, Schloss said in 2024. We need to respect everybody's races and religion. We need to live together with our differences. The only way to achieve this is through education, and the younger we start, the better. Schloss's family remembered her as a remarkable woman, an Auschwitz survivor, a devoted Holocaust educator, tireless in her work for remembrance, understanding, and peace. We hope her legacy will continue to inspire through the books, films, and resources she leaves behind, the family said in a statement. So Zvi Schloss died in 2016. Eva Schloss is survived, that Zvi was her husband, is survived by their three daughters, as well as grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And her message is so true today because of all the hate that we have in the world, that we really must respect each other and not have history repeat itself. So I think, Dottie, we can say that it's quite cold out there, so probably you really don't want to take a walk outside today. And be careful, because the ice is covered by the little bit of beautiful snow we had over the night. So can I say, Dottie, we'll say Happy New Year from the two of us, and have a good day.
And keep warm, but later on this week, you should be more comfortable than you are right now.
Not quite Hawaii, but...